You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us. The JX starts today with a debrief where JPR reporters discuss the stories they've been covering this week, including an upcoming strike on healthcare workers in Oregon, a recent report about homelessness across the country, and an innovative way to haze wolves to keep livestock safe. I'm Roma Battaglia, science, environment, and politics reporter.
I'm Jane Vaughn, housing, homelessness, and education reporter.
And I'm Justin Higginbottom, public health and safety reporter.
Welcome back, guys. The first debrief
Happy
of the new year.
Happy New Year.
Justin, you covered an upcoming statewide strike of healthcare workers. What's the news there?
Yeah, so this week, around 5,000 workers at Providence Hospitals gave notice that they would begin an open-ended strike starting on January 10th. So that's the biggest strike of its kind, really, in the state's history. And that includes nurses, physicians, and midwives at 8 hospitals and 6 clinics across Oregon. And this will be felt in the Rogue Valley. So nearly 400 nurses at Providence Medford Medical Center voted to go on strike as well. And that's a huge number. I actually called and made sure that I was hearing that correctly. But I guess that Medford Hospital has one of the largest nursing staffs in the state. Although, unlike at other hospitals, physicians at the Medford facility did not vote to go on strike. So only nurses in that bargaining unit voted for the walkout. And the reason for the strike has a lot to do with understaffing. So nurses there say it's hard to hire and retain staff because their salary is about a third less than other hospitals in the region. I spoke with a nurse at Providence Medford, and she says it's kind of a feeder hospital, so people will work there a bit and then move on to higher paying jobs at another hospital. And so because they're understaffed, this puts just a lot of pressure and stress on nurses. She said nurses are regularly texted on their days off to come into work. And when that happens, they're really not so pumped to do so because they know if they come in, it'll still be understaffed. So it's just going to be a really overwhelming shift. And that understaffing also affects patients' care, of course. And so that's a major point of organizers, is that this understaffing has an impact on patients' health.
Yeah, sounds like there's a lot of similar issues between this one. And we also saw issues with Asante nurses, too, in Medford as well earlier. Has Providence responded to this?
They have, at least, through statements. And you can see just how disconnected labor and management is by these competing accusations between Providence and the Oregon Nurses Association, which is one of the groups organizing this staff. So a chief executive for the Providence Southern Oregon service area said that Providence organizers have prioritized striking. So they kind of, in his words, they kind of had a plan to have this large strike to force the hospital's hand instead of negotiating. That, again, that's his claim. He also said that union leaders have refused to respond to a contract proposal from the hospital. So it's the workers not coming to the table. And this is like the opposite of what you hear from the ONA, the Oregon Nurses Association. So that group says management, they're the ones that have ignored proposals from staff, and they refuse to address workers' main complaints. When they do come with a proposal, it's just ignoring what the staff is looking for. That Medford nurse says they're only dealing with lawyers, really, and not really, they don't get to sit down with management itself. In a statement, the ONA also accused Providence of bargaining in bad faith and also retaliation against union leaders. So they're, both sides are making, pretty stark competing claims here.
Yeah. I mean, will this strike kind of impact patient care for people in the Rogue Valley?
It could. So Providence will hire nurses outside of the bargaining units to fill positions. That's what they did in June when there was a 3-day strike. And that strike, by the way, was over similar issues, wages and benefits. So they've been fighting over these issues for a while now. But the nurse in Medford I spoke to said those outside nurses that come in to fill the positions of the striking nurses, they won't necessarily have as much knowledge of the facility. So there's a learning curve at hospitals, and I guess things might not run as smoothly. So there will be nurses filling those positions, but it just might not work as smoothly as before. In a statement yesterday, Providence said they're prepared for a strike by nurses, so that sounds like they think they can hire enough outside labor to keep the hospitals running. By the way, they'll probably pay those outside nurses more than what they're paying their normal staff, so they'll be kind of losing money there. But Providence, they said they're still trying to negotiate with physicians, who are only around 150 workers out of this 5,000 total, but it seems like the hospital is much more unsure that they will be able to replace those doctors, which is also unique. Physicians going on strike, hasn't happened, at least in recent history in the state. I haven't found another case of that happening. So that, and again, that won't impact the hospital in Medford, but it could affect other Providence hospitals in the state if doctors go on strike. And last thing is that this is an open-ended strike, unlike the walkout in June, which was set for 3 days. So this strike would go on until a deal is reached, and we don't know when that might be, but we'll be covering it and probably head down to the picket lines at some point.
Yeah, interesting. So it'll definitely affect Providence's bottom line because they're going to have to hire other nurses to come in right. And fill that spot. Great. Thanks, Justin. Jane, you wrote a story this week about new data regarding homelessness across the country. First off, where does this data come from?
So it's from the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development. They do this annual report assessing homelessness, and the data comes from the annual point in time count, or the PIT count, which is basically the annual survey that the country does to determine the number of homeless people that is in a given community. And so it's basically conducted by local agencies. People physically go out and count people and talk to homeless people, and that's how we have this tally. So that's called the point in time count, and it was conducted in January of 2024. So that's where this data is coming from. So HUD kind of cautioned that the data was collected almost a year ago. Probably doesn't represent current circumstances. We're now almost a year later. And there have been a lot of changes in the past year. The big one that we've talked about before is the U.S. Supreme Court decision, which happened in June, where they upheld Grants Pass's ban on homeless people camping in public. And so that has really upended how cities can enforce their public camping laws, how they can address the homeless crisis. And so I imagine there's probably been some changes in the data within that last year, if only for that, big decision, if not for everything else. And so cities since then have really differed in their approaches to how they want to address homelessness since the Supreme Court decision. So Grants Pass has created two campsites for homeless residents. They recently allocated some money for a shelter. But in Yreka, for example, they're waiting for a new shelter to open before they sweep the encampment. So some changes happening there for sure. And then there's another point in time count that's going to be conducted later this month, which will reassess the crisis and get some new data.
Yeah, interesting. So this data came back all the way back in January. I mean,
right.
It seems like it took a while to get this data
yes.
out here. I mean, it took a whole year. But,
yeah.
Obviously, it's just a point in time, what's happened back in January.
One night in January.
Not, what happened right now, because obviously a lot has changed.
Right.
But, based on that, what did you learn from the data?
So there's not a ton of good news. I'm going to zoom out nationally just for a second, because homelessness nationally grew 18% since the previous year. The number of people who were experiencing homelessness on that single night in 2024 was the highest ever recorded.
Wow.
So it's 771,000 people-ish, which is about 23 out of every 10,000 people in the United States was homeless. And almost all populations reached record levels. So families with children, people with chronic patterns of homelessness, people staying in sheltered locations really, really increased. So there were a lot of nationwide increases. And there's a ton of interesting data about this. We have it linked on our website as well. And then just looking at our states in particular, California and Oregon are obviously still struggling with the homeless crisis. Homelessness grew in Oregon by 14% since the previous year. California, it only grew by 3%, which is not a lot, but still an increase. It's also interesting that most homeless people in both of these states are unsheltered, and so they're spending their nights in cars or parks or abandoned buildings or outside, so meaning they're not sheltered in a shelter or someone's home. And it's also interesting that in both states, over a third of homeless people, or more than 30%, experienced chronic homelessness, so this sort of repeated cycle of falling in and out of homelessness. And California alone has about 44% of all people experiencing chronic homelessness nationally. So a lot of chronic homelessness in California and in Oregon as well. And so that's a big problem for the states too.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it sounds like California's, disproportionately mm-hmm. representing the number of people who are experiencing chronic homelessness in the country.
For sure, yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a lot of bad
yes.
news. I mean, I guess they homelessness in Oregon and California grew less than the average. But, yeah. You know, is there any other good news?
There is some good news. There were some bright spots for sure. So both Oregon and California have reduced their number of unaccompanied homeless youth, which is great. And there were definitely some bright spots both in our states and nationally as well in terms of the number of homeless veterans. There's been a lot of money funneled into that population in particular, and it seems to have paid off. So, for example, far northern California, that region that we cover, reduced its number of homeless veterans by about 18% over that year. Nationally, the number of homeless veterans dropped to the lowest number on record, which is great. And then that region of far northern California also decreased its overall homeless population by almost 5%. So there was some good news. You know, there's been some money funneled into this, and some populations have seen some decreases in homeless numbers. But obviously, it's still a big problem. So I'm curious to see what the new data will show this year.
Yeah, great. Thanks, Jane. Justin, you also had a story about an innovative way to scare wolves. Normally, I'm scared of wolves. Why are people wanting to scare wolves?
I know. I love wolves. I don't know why people want to scare them, but I'm, you know, we're not ranchers. So they're eating livestock. That's what wolves do, and that's the issue. So this story comes from new research published recently by the United States Department of Agriculture. And a researcher there was monitoring wolves in Oregon's Klamath Basin. So that's Jackson and Klamath counties here in the south. And it's part of this program called Night Watch, where they sort of keep track of packs in the area and how many livestock they're killing, and just research that data using drones, actually. And this, you know, wolves killing livestock has been a growing problem for ranchers because the wolf population has grown. Since reintroduction, especially, there's a couple packs in our area, and then also the researcher mentioned there was a lone wolf going around, so that's kind of cool. But since reintroduction, the population statewide is approaching 200 wolves, so it's increased. And since then, ranchers have also reported increase in depredation, so the wolves killing their livestock. In the northeast of the state, wolves were delisted from the Endangered Species Act. So from my understanding, ranchers or animal control or some officials can kill wolves there if they encroach on a community or they start harassing animals. But wolves down where we are still federally protected. So that means ranchers must rely only on non-lethal methods for deterrence. They can't shoot wolves here. So these researchers from the USDA were flying drones in the area to monitor these wolves, and they got the idea to broadcast human voices from the drone through a speaker to see just sort of how the wolves reacted and if it might have an impact scaring off the wolves. And it turns out that worked really well. Wolves did not like that. They didn't like hearing human voices broadcast from the sky. And depredations dropped from around one every other night. So they were killing a lot of livestock there, to less than one per month. And so those findings were published recently, and that's what we covered.
Interesting. Broadcasting human voices through a speaker to scare away wolves. This seems like it could be a new way for ranchers to deal with wolves in a non-lethal way. Are there plans for ranchers to have these like drone shepherds in the future?
It's possible, although the researcher I spoke with said that right now it's probably too expensive. The drones they're flying aren't hobby drones. They're expensive commercial drones with like thermal imaging and stuff. But right now the USDA is still doing research on actually what is most effective at scaring the wolves off, that's called hazing, scaring the wolves from livestock. I didn't know that term before the story. And they're actually testing different audio to see where it works best. So besides human voices, they've sent me some clips of what they're testing, and that includes gunshots, fireworks, also a scene from the movie Marriage Story, and the song Thunderstruck by AC/DC. So they'll be testing this audio to see what works best to haze wolves. I don't know how loud these recordings will be played, but also might be kind of surreal if someone's like around the area late at night and you're in a rural area and they just hear AC/DC played from the sky. So that'll be interesting.
Interesting. It reminds me of the movie Apocalypse Now, where they play the opera music as they're flying in on helicopters. Jane, really quickly, you also did a story about some new laws that have just taken effect in Oregon. Could you give us a quick rundown?
Yeah, so Oregon's legislature had a short session this year, so they've got kind of a shorter list, but there's a total of 23 new laws that went into effect on January 1st. One of them allows school districts to install cameras on buses to record drivers who illegally pass the school buses, so then you can cite people. One of them tries to improve transparency on school boards by requiring that public school districts and community colleges and universities have to record their meetings and upload them for the public to watch online. So that's trying to work on public transparency. So yeah, like I said, there's 23 new laws that went into effect on January 1st, and we've got more listed on our website.
Great. Excellent. Thanks, Jane. That's it for the debrief this week. Thanks for listening. You can reach the newsroom with comments on our coverage and suggestion for things we should cover in the future through our news tip line, which you can find on our website at ijpr.org. And you can find this program and more on our website at jeffexchange.org or subscribe on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms.